My talk will be on the distinguishability of operations. The emphasis is distinguishability of operations instead of states. We will reveal some results of distinguishability of states in order to compare these two types of things. And so the whole quantum information science are consequences of quantum postulates for rules of quantum mechanics. And sometimes you are amazed by how funny things can come out from such simple things. And also beneficial to look at this distinguishability in the framework of this postulates. So the first and the most well-studied problem is state distinguishability. The problem is that you have state either zero, either do zero or do one, and you can define distance or fidelities between them, and you can study the problem how what is the best procedure, best protocol to distinguish. That you can get the best probability of success or minimum error. And what we will emphasize this talk is operation distinguishability. By operation, we mean not only unitaries and measurements and also general operations described as G-bars. So, and the postulate of composition tells us how you combine subsystems by the system. And we, in this work, we will focus on how many, so in the setting of unicouples, the states are. And copies of the operations that you can use it at times. And instead of thinking of distinguishability in the discrete sense, you can also consider the continuous vision of distinguishability. The state is labeled discrete by 0 or 1. So there's a continuous parameter theta there. Or similarly for parameters in operations, you can think of it as a curve in the space of states or 16 maps. And what we will focus on is the difference between operation distinguishability and state. And because we studied general the distinguishability of general quantum operations, it also allows to discuss the effect of noise on estimation. So this is the outline of the talk. We first come to the discrete case, this is everybody in our field will know the basic facts that two states, pair states, are perfectly distinct, and only if they are solved. And you can compute the optimal product, and that the field making error is minimized and intense formula. And what's important to us is that we can see from this simple statement that once two states not perfect, then the perfect require the copy. Because what draws here is the inner product. And the inner product is not zero, also not zero. exhaustion schedule for finite game. But Hastings and Diarrhino found independently that operations has different properties, that you're given any different unitaries, it's always possible to distinguish in purpose. And by the difference, we are seeing that two unitaries are not the same of probabilities because of. And here we explain the main idea of how to prove the characters, not the series. And suppose we use these simple circuit here. You place the unknown unitaries and first you compare pure state that is, may include an acceleration. And apply a perfect sphere, and you will get output depending on these different unitaries. And once these outputs are orthogonal, then you are done. So this scheme can tell you perfectly U0 from U1. And the lemma says that this is possible if and only if you can find a destinated row such that the tree slope goes to 0.
So you can't always find such a row, is that the case?
We'll see it. Now for U0 not different from U1, that was what we had explained, then this unit race has at least two different eigenvalues, and we will assume one is 1 and the other is yes. Yes, it has skipped from 1. And to find such a row, we consider a simple case that row is diagonal in the psi j basis. So you can choose an arbitrary diagonal density matrix in this basis, then this quantity is just the convex combination of the eigenvalues of these unit rays. So for example, in this case, is the convex hull of these two eigenvalues just fine. And what we are requiring is that zero is in this convex set. Sometimes it does not belong to the point zero, does not belong to this. Then we can use multiple times of the unit is here. So what changes is you get the tensor in here. So the matrix, when you get tensor twice, then you will have EI theta, and you also has two times theta. So by using two unitaries parallel in this box, you will increase the convex hull. So as long as there are two different points, and you apply this trick of many copies of unitaries.
So are you trying to distinguish these unitaries as
yeah.
Okay. Is it? I don't understand why if you want, so U1 and U0 are both right? So can't you, it has to be the same role, right? You can't rotate the phase difference between them so that it will always be the same, right?
Well, having a phase just turns that thing around
yeah,
and
right.
Doesn't change whether zero is
right. That's yeah, they're relative. Fixed relative. Okay, sorry.
And by increasing the number n, you can simply show that finally you can find a finite n that zero is equal. So we have shown how to distinguish which is perfect. And now we come to the first main problem of this talk, which is distributability of measurement. So the idea is that you're given a device that is claimed to be a measurement, and it has an input, and an output is just the classic data. You read that 0 or 1 is clean. And so in the discrete case, you are given a measurement apparatus that is either described by M0 or M1. And the label is lost. And so the objective is to find the lost label.
And by measurement, you mean EVM or can this be POV?
What we will prove is the result for projective purposes, but I do not know whether it's possible. In some sense, it's not possible by adding some conditions. So first, let's see that this is possible to distinguish different measurements perfectly. The first example is that measurement size is like 0 or so. It's either a measurement in 0, 1 measurement, or it's measurement in the matrix. And the recipe for this problem is it prepares if you ask it, measure the unknown apparatus. And then you claim that the label is 0 if both terms are identical and 1 at 1. So, how do you see this? First, we write identity of this entangled state. And you can check it. And if you measure along the z-axis, the result will always be. And if you measure on the Hadamard axis, the result will be different. This is the first example that perfect distributability of. And our second example is a little bit complicated. There's a parameter n here, which is an integer. And when n is very large, then this measurement is very close in the sense that this state is very close to zero, character. And when n equals to 2, it includes the example 1 as a special case. In this case, it's just minus. And the recipe is to prepare and include the doubles. And you, again, you measure the unknown apparatus on this cube. Then the final decision is that the label is 0 if there is exactly 1 minus 1 in the outcome and 1. So the verification of this result will be simply like this doubles and check. The measurement of sigma z obviously gives you only 1 minus 1 in the result. And the second part is true that the measurement of M1 gives you a result that contains only exactly 1 minus 1. And you can check it easily. The problem is how do you construct problems? So to do this, we need to discuss in general problem. And so the first case that we are considering is the completely projective problems. That is, each projective is of rank 1. And we define a matrix in the class of this basis. So you can see it's uniformly. And so it's a similar circuit to what we have used in distinguishing unit rates. We just replace the unit rate with the unknown measurement, but the output now is classical. And if these two measurements are perfectly distinguishable with the circuits, I just mean that you can prepare some state and apply the measurements, and then you can condition it on the outputs and do a state distinguishing here. So it's not difficult to show that this is possible, and only if you can find the test finish zero such that real time speed is zero diagonal. And in comparison to the previous result on between unitaries, the criterion is you find that you find a density that has zero trace. And so you can see the difference of distinguishing unitaries and measurements, just stronger requirement. And if you remove the ancilla, you can see that this estimated must be translated to this version. And the reason we are considering the case that there is no ancilla use is, remember that in the first two examples we have discussed is of this kind do not use the ancilla, and some results on this topic will give us insights in the problem. So computationally, to find a matrix row such that Ruby has zero diagonal can be solved using SP, semi-definite program, because the constraints here are linearly specified as this diagonal item is linear terms of this unknown row, and the requirement that row is semi-definite. So you can solve this problem by efficiently, and possibly this can also be solved efficiently, but we want closed form results instead of numerical results. So simplify this result in theorem 2 to this sub theorem, which states that perfect distinguishability is possible without ancilla if and only region 3 and then 0 combined. That is, V has a submatrix that is has the same row index and column index. It's 0. It's determined 0. And so we return to the single qubit case by using the three theorems we have obtained. In a single qubit case, you can see easily that by rotating the measurements, you can always assume that n0 is sigma z and 1 is a general measurement in the xz plane. And the parameter theta is just the angle of this measurement. You can think of a point as a measurement by simply defining the measurement to be the plus one measurement of corresponding to this state and minus one of the position.
And when you write these conditions out in the Yaman answer, do you take the basis of states of the projectors and your basis to write the states? Or when you have conditions about the diagonal, right?
Yeah.
The later one, yeah. Which basis do you write?
In the
basis determined by n0.
So this kind of rotation disappears with you take the
interval. What determines the computational basis here in zero?
What
determines the computational basis here in zero?
I think you're assuming that the computational basis is given, and then M0 and M1 are both expressed in terms.
Oh.
Yeah. So our analysis of jump 2 is this. So we have used an encompassed parallel of the measurement operators in example 2. So the matrix V is V times N. And the chaos entry of this matrix is this function. Because we have different, the K and L are in the strings indexing an element of the matrix. And when there is a distance here, you get V, and when there is not a distance, you get V. And the place minus 1 occurs only when both of these bits are 1. So this is the bitwise span, then you take the three ways. And the D here is given distance. So the chaos element of this matrix can have this expression. Now we define an index set. Recall that in theorem 3 we know that once this matrix has a submatrix that indexed by some set, and the submatrix is singular, then we have an example of perfect distributability. So this matrix is that submatrix indexed by this set. And you can easily see that because this is the set of every Hamming weight 1, so if two indexes are different in this set, KL, then the distance will be 2. And this gives you this expression, and the weight here is all zero, because different strings here, so the chicken is all real string. So off diagonal is a to the n minus 2 power n squared. And on the diagonal, the distance is zero, and this a to the n power, and we have a free scale, because and this is of weight 1. And this submatrix is a singular matrix. Only if you have this equation. And the state that we are using is just the eigen value of this matrix. In this case, it's just all one vector. So this gives you the explanation of how we come to the central 2. And okay. In the next few slides, we have derived the optimal solution to perfectly distinguishing perfect qubits of the circles. And because of the theorem 1, we are trying to find the smallest possible n such that there exists rho, and rho v times n to have zero diagonal. So recall that v is a simple matrix. Here. So first we give the lower bound. If there exists such a rho and this matrix has zero diagonal, then also obvious that when you apply a z times the n here, it's also has zero diagonal and zero trace. and think of this as check the eigenvalues of this quantity, and this reduce the trace problem is the criterion for identifying unitaries. And in Asian's paper, there is already a low bound. So a low bound is easy. We can reduce the unitary. And the construction of to saturate the lower bound, we have to give a construction that n equals to pi divided by theta. To do this, we define a set En, which is even parity field spins of even parity Lebesgue spins. And we define a state, which has this form. Is essentially a Calgary equivalent to the GHP state. But you, you cannot simply replace it with the GHP. And so we are trying to find some density matrix here and to obtain more zero dynamics. So we first give this data and you just put it into the place of the estimated zero, and you'll find that for all j that is not in the set, again, the element is already zero, and it's obvious because you take j and j here, this quantity is already zero. And otherwise, that is, j is in En, then you will get this function. And here is proof for having also a direct calculation. First, we write out direct product multiplication of matrices. It can be right as a summation here. And notice that the Heimlich weight of J and K calculates how many ones in strings and JK here, adjacent to JK here, constant the position that there is one is one and one is zero. And this comes if both positions are ones. So they are identical. And we substitute this equation into this part, we will get a d jk here, and we will leave w jk, which is cancelled with this space. So then next step is to partition the distance DJK, DJK CL, and just change the summation. And because K is in the end and J is in the end, so the distance must be even. And therefore, we can summation over all given number of L. And for any given L, you can see that the L will be exactly, then chooses L different Ks satisfying this equation. So we can, and finally, this is equals to the quantity that we can. So that's true in this case. So now the idea is that we need to find a row here. So, but we have halfway done because the set is of size n minus 1, and we only need to cancel this remaining part to zeros. And the idea is to define the partition of this in and defining states. Recursively. So the set EN consider consists of four binary units with x 0, and EN 2 with x 1, and 1, 0, 1, etc. We are character partition EN by the N. If it's 0, then it belongs to the first set. If it's not zero, then it must be one. And there must be another one before it, because it has an even parity for the set. So, and the state is also recursively defined in terms of this state. So, and the reason for this is you can easily calculate that this quantity it has a positive diagonal only on this set and on other positions of diagonal positive. And therefore, because that this quantity is a negative quantity because n is slightly larger than pi over theta, and this is slightly larger than pi over 2. So, will be generally a negative number, and you cancel this negative number with this positive number by choosing an appropriate convex combination of n and n. So basically, what we have shown is that to this equation to measure qubits, you will need pi over 2. Times to use the denominator operations. And it's also natural because that is very small, you will need more times to get perfect distinguishability. And you can see that when it is higher than 2, and the next part, we will show that general projective measurements are not necessarily of rank one projectives are also distinguished. So the problem is you have descriptions of measurements. And because they are different, there are at least one case that PK is different. Otherwise, M0 and M1 are unequal. And the recipe for distinguishing these two measurements is you apply the measurement and apply a limit free and apply the measurement. So first, we prepare a state that is in the space defined by this projector, and we measure this part. And if the result is not k, then you can see we are one because you prepare a state in okay, if this M0, it must output. And then the unitary here, if you go 3, is that the output of the first measurement is K. And the state will either be in the space of PK or in the space of QK. And the measurement here, the unitary here is stabilize the PK subspace and rotate the QK subspace to the subsurface. So the once this is can be done, we assume that this can be done. And then we measure again the output of this measurement is the output is clear again since that K result hasn't changed, so it must be the first measurement. And if the result is not k, then only this case is. So what remains to show is that you can find k is fixed and k is rotated. So here is a simple example when pk and qk are in three dimensions, a three dimensional real numbers. And you have two subspaces of vectors. You want one of them fixed and rotate. The other one is orthogonal. This is only possible when this angle theta is under the 45. If it's larger than 55, then you rotate it. And so on. Because it will form, I don't know, chord. And fortunately, we can prove the result for the general case where. PK and QK are about the same length r, and you can always find such a row, find such a tool to satisfy two conditions. PK and QK, PK times QK and QK are greater norm is less than QK, and the full dimension of this matrix is larger than 3 times. So these two conditions are more saturated. We think that we cannot make any improvement. But it's not necessary to make any improvement because the same trick is that we can parallel many measurements here and many measurements here. Then what you will get is pk times n and qk times n, and this quantity goes exponentially small. So it's easy to find the finite number that is less than 1 over square root of n. And the dimension goes to the d to the nth power, and the rank goes to r to nth power. So it's also easy to find the n once the d and r are not the same. And another thing to notice is that we have used post-measurement state here. And this is not necessary to achieve perfect distinguishability by using the trick of you just put in enough this almost in some sense here. And therefore the postman is the so this is the first part of showing the comparison of states only some states are perfect. And so if you run the two states, they are not also. And for operations, we have seen that unit states are perfect distance and projected metrics are perfect distance. And you can construct some CFT maps, which is essentially the projective and you can see that also
probably. Was it crucial in this that there's so all projective measurements? Of course, it's the case that all projective measurements are unitarily complex. There's a unitary operation of taking. If I propose instead, two POVMs that are unitarily equivalent. I think they're black box. This POVM part of the operation acting on that. Then you might think, well, I've got a fixed measurement device where I throw my quantum system into it. Either the identity occurs or this other unit. Might you reduce that problem? One of these, or is there something that will block that?
Well, I think that the structure of projective measurement that are formed up orthogonal basis are used is
extensively. So if it's the case that any course of grading some of the outcomes, they fall into orthogonal sets, might you be able to?
If that's possible, but.
And in the continuous case, we are essentially discussing transformation. And the problem is we are trying to know some decision of the character of the state of system. And by character, we mean in the physics, that is sort of angle or time, but a degree of decision is also the abstract parameter. So that is curve of the space of, from the states of applications. Here is some background of estimation. Classically, parameter estimation is a central problem in mathematical statistics. And the reason for considering quantum parameter estimation is that there is a speed up we have seen in Dominic's talk. And applications of this speed up and related parameter estimation stuff is you can enumerate a lot of them. Some of them in PIL, some of them in different size, but all of them are parameter estimation problems in this kind. And classically, now the problem is have a distribution that depends on parameter theta. And we have drawn, according to the distribution, a center of size n independently. And you want to find the estimate of parameter theta as a function of the sample. And here's a simple example, the so-called Bayes problem. You have a Bayes coin, which gives you a head with probability p and here, which is 1 minus p. And the task is to estimate p after any tosses of the coin. So one of the natural estimates of this formula, and this is called the sample mean. But in general, how do we construct and generate this? This is two of the mostly fundamental problems in classical statistics, and they are. Methods to construct estimates including a method of performance and maximum electrical estimators and variation estimators. And there are also how to evaluate estimators. There are qualitative measures such as bias or unbias, and quantitative that you can measure estimator by the MSE. The MSE is just expectation of the squared error. And in this talk, we will use the push of the MSE because this here is a square here. So take a square root of MSE, then this is a measure of the same dimension of the original parameter. So some true effects about this being estimated. But what is important here is that it has an MSE times 1 minus divided by n. And you may think that it's possible to find the better estimators of the balance problem. And it turns out that it's not possible. There is a word called the Kramer algorithm. And that's for any unbiased estimator. And we have this lower bound where n is the size of the sample and the receiver is sufficient information. And define on this. And in the biased problem, the j theta is the sufficient information of the p is you can calculate it. And if you substitute it in care, you have a low bound of p minus p.
times on MSP, again, is that the central unit is already the best in this. And Fisher gives theories that the MLE, that maximum lateral distributor, will be asymptotically saturated system. So this is the argument why MLE is used extensively. And what is important to me is that this gives you a convergence rate of RMSC on all class estimation problems at the scale of 1 over 7. And in equivalent estimation, the state estimation and operation estimation, the state estimation are given the copies of the state of the theta, and in operation estimation, you use the use the operation theta in times to estimate. And it has a long history. Back to the 70s, here's these are two books. You can find those in their work, the quantum version of the quantum law established, and it looks almost like almost the same like the classical version. And the only difference is the definition of this. And what is important is that this kind of theory is also rules in investigation of parameters of states. So this is sometimes the concept of standard quantum limit, but you will see that the estimation of quantum operations is another limit of this quantum theory. Better. And here is some examples of how to achieve super efficient estimation. And the word super efficient is coined by Andrew Spitzer, which is our paper. And the problem is, it's a simple case where it's a 2x2 matrix, and there's a parameter C2 here, and we want to estimate it. And in fact, it's equivalent to the general phase estimation problem, that is, when the eigenvectors are independent of the parameter. So, general results is most general result of estimation unit is that the estimation of CD is also a simple unit. And we will discuss in the following different ways of which one is called covariant method and the other is amplification method. So the covariant method, you have a simple here, and it's a pair of simple which is can be entangled state using its boundary. And if this is a product state, you can prove that the Heisenberg limit is not possible because reduces to the estimation of parameters of states. And the input is the population of cat k, and cat k is just an equal division of what the students can rate k. So the idea is that when this type of difficulties are applied, then there are always k ones in this case. This basis k in the face can be clear what it's saying. So after you apply the difficulties, you are kind of state. It's the face is constant. And you apply the Fourier transformation, and the Fourier transformation is the discrete case of the covariant measurement. Proposed by collaborating this group. And next we do a zero-one measurement on each group. And finally, you estimate so it's the number of ones in the outcome and divided by. The analysis of this covariant method is the key to it is to choose another measure instead of MSC. This does not change the covariance rate because this is a this quantity is small. There are some quantity the same. And choosing this kind of calculation that we have. And first you write out the probabilities of observing L1 symbols. And then the W is just expectation of this quantity and expectation of 1 is 1 and the summation of this PL. When L is observed, the theta is estimated with the value L divided by theta. So it's this quantity, and you can simplify it this because of without this term, the quantity will be hard to manage, and not possible to simplify. So we copy the quantity here, and if you choose the zero, W will be dependent of theta, and the problem is to minimize this W subject to the unit condition, normalization condition, and it's equivalent to finding the minimum vector value of this matrix, and it's So in terms of R and C, you have obtained in practical that is achieved. And this formula is already obtained in Oliver's book in 1982. And the minimization is, to my knowledge, is first found in Zach and Master's paper on optimal control.
What year
is that one?
What year
was published? I don't remember, it's 90s. So the convergence rate of order 1 over n is optimal, so you do not you cannot expect better limit than Heisenberg limit, and it's fundamentally faster than trivial protocols such as sense topography. And interestingly, this can be modified to improve the free specification protocol. Which is discovered by Van Damme, the Arrhenius Eckert, and Mosca in Austria. The key point to see that this layout and the parallel layout are essentially the same is that the state before the Fourier transformation is this one. So the analysis of different layouts are almost the same. And next we come to another different method of parameter estimation is the amplification method. And the key idea is to amplify theta to k theta and estimate directly of value of k theta with linear cost. So there are different ways of achieving the amplification. For example, you can sequentially apply the matrix, or you can apply parallel on the this. And this is this circuit essentially gives you a k-piceta coin that is the parameter is essentially. And the idea is that if you can estimate n theta within a constant error, then when you divide it by n, you get an estimate of theta that is that has error that border one over n. So, but there is a problem here because this is not linear functions or functions. They are periodic and so we handle this complications. And you can think of it as an interesting game. It's called estimation game. It's a game you require to give estimate of the real parameter theta in this unit interval. And each access to m coin once will cost $10. So you have a freedom to choose what kind of coin you are doing. And the question is what the best you can do with the dollars. You may think that it's not a good idea to buy a bit that is randomly with dollars. But it may be possible that if you win, you get the best estimate of some parameter, you will get a very good amount of room. So the idea is that we can amplify the parameter gradually and carefully. And there is a bitwise estimation particle of MSE log n over n. It's proposed by Dopp and Brewer. And the basic idea is this. First, you use the pi theta over 2 coin to get the knowledge of the first. So with high probability, the point is the point is here, or this high probability is here. Then if it's here, then you amplify this half, first half of the line, and you use choose n equals to 2, and you recursively use the problem to the first problem, and so on. The interval that's reduced by half.
Or essentially a time.
So if you want
to pace yourself, wrap up.
Can I
put it quickly?
Okay, 12 minutes of question. And but there is a problem here because because you it's not possible to with high probability decide whether theta is in the first half of theta might be around 1.5, and it was always the high probability to decide to those cases. And we have designed and shaped to solve this
aspect. That looks like a entire space system.
This?
Yeah, it's
actually quite easy. Oh, I said not
exactly, but that's more or less what he was actually doing.
No, though, I think he's trying to get the Heisenberg limited variance, whereas Cotard's standard quantum limited variance.
Yeah. So the next part of the result is that we're considering the parameter estimation of general quantum operations, and so we have seen that unit rates, parameter of unit rates can be estimated faster as the Heisenberg limit, but in some cases it's not possible, even for quantum operations. And one one example is the Dipper-Eden channel. And the idea is to introduce programmability that is proposed by Professor Nielsen in 1998. to combine the quantum version of thermal raw bound and the idea of probability, put that for programmable parameters. Must obey the standard quantum limit, so it's not possible to achieve faster, super efficient estimations. Now, there are some applications of this theorem. You can easily see that poly channels are programmable, so estimation of order one is quite thin, and you can even see the estimations of DMZ channel, that is classical channel, and secure it as a poly channel. Then you can see that classical channels is fast to and actually we studied the effect of already noise on estimation. So you can because when this constant scope is small, then these two channels are almost the same. You might expect super efficient estimations when the epsilon is small. But it is possible to see that any quantum channel can be programmed probabilistically. So, what this means is that this channel is programmable. And so, a restatement of this stuff is that the parade noise doing the estimation globally. Once there is parade noise in the system, then you cannot achieve estimation. And also saying that there's no threshold theory for estimation because no matter how small it is, it's programmable and it's a water but no square root. And what you can change is only the constant. And the final question that we consider in this talk is whether it's possible to achieve super efficient estimations for non-unit computation. Before that, only super estimations for unit are known. And we have given a lot of type of examples that estimations of general quantum channels is not possible to achieve super efficiency. And here is an example. But the main idea is that this is a question of measurement. And we have used the result of this measurement disability to prepare and inquire to amplify the parameter which we have caused. So here's what the conclusions, and we have seen that for quantum states, parameter estimations based on L and for quantum operations, parameters can be programmable parameters are. And that result is that people are realized within the super efficient universally. And so, thank you. And sorry for.
Last question. Just the amplitude amplification technique you showed.
Yeah.
You multiply beta by k. Is there a problem that wraps around the unit circle?
So that is why we just very kind of testing to deal with this problem.
Specifically, yeah.
Order. Thank you again.